Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table,
a new United Methodist community of faith taking shape at Central UMC in Sacramento, California.
The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Duhirsu,
with a musical introduction by Anthony Coleman, our director of music.
Thanks for listening. Our scripture this morning comes from the Gospel of Mark, and I'll be reading from the sixth chapter. The verses are a little bit broken up, 30 to 34 and then 53 to 56. That's on purpose. These two passages bookend a story many of us are familiar with, which is, some people call it the story of the loaves and fishes. We're going to work with that story next week and then again in the fall. But for today, we're going to hear about Jesus and the disciples and their attempt to go and rest. Disciples gathered around Jesus and told him all they had done and taught, and he said to them, "Come away to a deserted place all by yourselves and rest a while." For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. And they went away in the boat to a deserted place by themselves. Now many saw them going and recognized them, and they hurried there on foot from all the towns and arrived ahead of them. As he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion for them, because they were like sheep without a shepherd, and he began to teach them many things. When they had crossed over, they came to a land at Gennesaret and moored the boat. And when they got out of the boat, people at once recognized him. And they rushed about that whole region and began to bring the sick in mats to wherever they heard he was. And wherever he went, into villages, cities, or farms, they laid the sick in the marketplaces and begged him that they might touch even the fringe of his cloak. And all who touched it were healed.
I am a pilgrim and a stranger, traveling through this worrisome land. I got a home built in the yonder city, good Lord, and it's not made by hand.
Mark's gospel describes it this way. The apostles gathered around Jesus, and they told him all that they'd done and they taught, and he said to them, "Come away to a deserted place all by yourselves and rest for a while." For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat, and they went away in a boat to a deserted place by themselves. And so I have this image of the disciples, and this word gets used twice in Mark's gospel, apostle, and apostle literally just means sent out. So the disciples were sent out by Jesus, and they come back, and I imagine they're pretty excited to tell him what they've been doing. We don't know what they've been doing because it's erased from the text, but I imagine that they might have been healing folks. They might have actually been near the synagogue and teaching both early in the morning and late at night. They might have journeyed out to the edge of town, and they might have found someone there whose life was literally in shambles, who was begging, and they might have worked to figure out how do we weave this person back into community, and they wanted Jesus to know this, and then we did this, and then after we did, we woke up really early in the morning, and we didn't even sleep. We just stayed up, and we kept working, but Jesus doesn't actually give them any kudos. He doesn't, like, write a quick thank you card. He doesn't pat them on the back and say, "Way to go, team." He just comes up with one more directive. And this is hard to hear. Come away to a deserted place and rest a while. Come by yourselves. I don't know what they wanted to hear, but I think I would have wanted way to go. Good work. I sent you out and you did it. But nope, just come away. Steve Garnes Holmes writes about those deserted places and resting in them in this way. Breathe in. Breathe out. Let go of all you have accomplished. Step out of what you've done. The who you think you are that comes from something into the one, the who that is I am. Be still. Breathe in. Breathe out. Set everything down. The great burden of being yourself, what everyone thinks, even you, the work that you do of remembering what you must and you mustn't, let them all go. Be still. Breathe in. Breathe out. Come to the Sabbath place where nothing, even you, is fashioned. Everything just is. Come into the rest that is God, the silence from which your light pours, the Spirit brooding over the waters. Here where you are received, receive yourself. Be still. Breathe in. Breathe out. I got to go away this week to one of those deserted places. It was an hour outside of Minneapolis, outside of a town that's mostly known for its youth prison called Red Wing, and it was a monastery run by a group of Catholic nuns. And they provided a space for 20 or so young progressive clergy from all over the country to gather together and to rest, to go to one of those deserted places. And it was deserted for me mostly because there was hardly any access to Wi-Fi and my cell phone reception didn't really come in. So that's how I define deserted. And I need those spaces, even though they make me really anxious and uncomfortable at times, because it means that it's truly remote and we're going to have to just be still. And that can be a hard place to go to. For me, this week, though, was filled with connecting with inspired and inspiring young pastors. These are creative folks who are starting new congregations. They're creative folks who are working in existing congregations who've dwindled down to just a few folks, and they're redeveloping them. And it was the first time, Linda can attest to this, that I've gone away to a pastor gathering and not just been totally disgruntled and upset with everything. I loved being with this group. I really loved it. And it was led by a Quaker educator and peace activist and theologian named Parker Palmer. Some of you might have read Parker Palmer. He does a lot of activism around education and also writes on spirituality. And these 3 days that we were together, we were working together on a book that Parker Palmer has recently published called Healing the Heart of Democracy. And we're going to spend time in the fall around election season moving through a 5-week series around some of the themes of that book, Healing the Heart of Democracy. And I'm going to put that aside for the moment because mostly what I just want to name is how profound it was for this group of young pastors who are not, unlike the disciples in some ways, we're like hustling, as Anthony would say, as a musician. And Anthony and our musicians hustle a lot with music. And pastors are always hustling with music as well. I wish I was hustling with music. That was a Freudian slip there. I don't hustle with music because I wouldn't get far, actually. But moving around, coming and going, coming and going, coming and going. And that's where Mark's gospel begins with those disciples, the apostles. They were sent out and they can't slow down. It says that there's not even enough leisure to eat. And maybe that's an extreme, but we've probably all experienced that at various moments in our life where it's just so busy that we can't even slow down to share a meal. And so I think, resonated deeply with this particular text and needed some space to go away to a deserted place. And when we did, one of the images that came up for us when we stepped back was this image of composting. And there are a lot of people in this room that are probably way more effective composters than I am. But I want to share just a few words about this image that came up for me during that time. It came up, I think, in large part because composting is kind of this space that's off to the side where we take the things, the experiences of the past, things that are dying, decaying, we mix them together and they create the soil that gives life to something new. They sustain us, literally, they heal the earth beneath us. And I was looking at some of these images here, and as I understand it, balance in composting is always really important. You want to have the right balance of the green stuff, which I have to look at my notes. I could ask Antonio, but the green stuff is high in nitrogen, and the brown stuff that you put in is high in carbon. And you have to mix these things together with air and with water, and you turn them over. They're layered on top of one another. And so these are the experiences of life that are layered one upon another. It requires attention and intention, but mostly composting happens in spite of us. It's not our actual work that does it. It's not to say we don't participate in it and we don't have a role, but something about composting is powerful. It just is because it just is. That's what happens. It's how the earth heals itself with just a little bit of our attention, just a little bit of our intention. Healing. In Mark's gospel, the story that we read this morning goes there as well. When they'd crossed over, they came to the land at Gennesaret and they moored the boat. When they got out of the boat, people at once recognized Jesus and they rushed about the whole region. And they began to bring the sick on mats to wherever they heard he was. And wherever he went, into villages or cities or farms, they laid the sick in the marketplaces. And they begged him that they might touch even the fringe of his cloak, and all who touched it were healed. It's striking to me that they took the sick to the marketplaces. Usually when we have folks who are sick, we either want to stay inside or parts of our own life that are broken. We don't want to put that out in the marketplace where everybody can look at it. We want to hold that in the most private of places. We don't dare take the parts of us that are broken and lay them out for everyone to see. But that's what happens. I think of the marketplace as the place where anyone could go. It was public territory, public space. But it was also Caesar's space, because what happened in the market was either bartering, trading, or purchasing. Everything there depended upon the economy of Caesar. And so there's some kind of radical affront that the author of Mark's gospel makes when he has those folks and Jesus going to the heart of Caesar's economy and saying, our healing is going to look totally different than what you've been imagining. And that's where Jesus meets these folks. That's how he meets them. In the midst of Caesar's economy, Jesus heals. And he heals them as they touch even the fringe of his cloak. I've always imagined that, and I heard it anew in our song, in Aaron Neville's song that we sang together this morning. I imagine folks just kind of touching the edge of Jesus' clothes. And what I found in reading this week was that actually Numbers 15 talks about a fringe. And so this might have been in that writer's mind when the writer was writing about this particular text. The Lord said to Moses, speak to the Israelites and tell them to make fringes on the corners of their garments throughout their generations and to put a blue cord on the fringe at each corner. You have the fringe so that when you see it, you'll remember all the commandments of the Lord and you'll do them, not follow the lust of your own heart and your own eyes. So you shall remember and do all my commandments and you shall be holy to God. So to touch the fringe, and you can see it here before us, to touch the fringe of Jesus' cloak was to touch the commandments. It was to touch the law of the Jewish community. So Jesus himself is wearing the tradition of his people. He is the evolution of church in a very particular way, in that he's refusing to let go of what has been. He's carrying it with him on his own person, in his own body, as he moves and walks and has his being. And for those of us on this side of Easter, we find ourselves longing to trust and to hope that Jesus is the fulfillment of that law. And so for us, to touch Jesus is to touch the fringe, to love God and to love neighbor. I had a strong feeling of what that kind of experience might have been like this week. I came together with these other pastors, and Parker Palmer has this way. He has this presence. You walk into the room with him, and everything just kind of slows down. He has this way of helping you to see right before you, to see right within you, what is of ultimate concern for you. And just sit with that. Stay with it. Be still. Breathe in. Breathe out. Maybe you've encountered folks in your own life who it's kind of like they're walking around with that fringe. Their life is just this deep expression of the commandments to love God and to love neighbor. And when you're with them, you just want to spend more time with them. And when you're away, you remember back on what that was like. And I think there was some sense of that kind of healing that the folks in Jesus' day were experiencing as they touched the fringe of his cloak in that marketplace. This is kind of what we've been tracing over the last 7 weeks. We've been trying to reflect on how have the followers of God, the people of God, those who seek to follow Jesus, how have they tried to touch the fringe of that cloak throughout the generations? And it's evolved, it's shifted and changed, it's transitioned and it's transformed. Everybody, I'm told that a person in a kitchen table this week, I reflected on our worship series, which is the first time we've done an 8-week series. So she reflected back on the 8 weeks and she said, what's been striking is that everybody's been struggling. Sometimes it's been in the form of arguments, oftentimes it's been in opposition to some other expression of Christianity, but always people have tried to work out their stuff in every age. It's just what people do. And it looks different in every age. So maybe we can find ways of going forward, being part of the evolution of church as we look back on how we've touched that fringe in the past. We can remember that when we began this series, it was with Miriam leading the dancing. And we might remember that through that story, God's people have always experienced God acting on behalf of liberation, freeing the oppressed. And then in the midst of that freedom, you might find even enough freedom to dance and to sing and to praise. Miriam led us in that way. And then we might remember those earliest followers of Jesus who gathered secretly in homes to break bread together, and the ways that they transgressed boundaries in their day, where these folks weren't to come together with these folks, and they did. That's how Jesus lived and moved and had his being, and that's how those earliest followers were. And we might be able to remind ourselves that that simple sacred meal has always been revolutionary. And then we might remember that the imperial church arose in the 4th century as Christianity crossed this huge gulf where the followers of Jesus had always been those who'd been crushed by empire. And then all of a sudden we find ourselves on the platform of empire as a church. And we might wonder, how can we even read those sacred texts when we've become so malaligned with empire even to this day? When we read those stories and the folks following Jesus were being crushed by empire, and today the church finds itself so many ways woven with it, what do we do with that? Perhaps some of us will find some resonance with those desert mothers and fathers who left and went out into the deserted places to be still, to listen for God's voice. Maybe we can hear in their ways, we can see in their ways the really thin line between work and prayer when we live out a disciplined life in community. And maybe we'll find in the words that they've prayed throughout the generations a new old way of connecting with God's love and God's hope in this day. And in the Reformation in Western Europe, maybe we can see that we all have this tendency to think that we can save ourselves. We're going to make a way out of no way. And for some of us, saving ourselves looks like this. It means I am going to believe the right thing and then put a box around it and mail it in and call it good. And for others of us, believing that we're going to save ourselves means that I'm going to do enough justice. I'm going to love my neighbor so perfectly. I'm going to put a box around it and I'm going to mail it in and it's all going to be okay. And maybe we can remember from those Reformation leaders like Luther that we are saved through grace, through God's love that sustains. And then the revival movement of the early 19th century in this country, maybe we can find enough space, even in a world where this expression of Christianity often just gets ridiculed, that personal conversion, seeing myself turn around and be passionate that I want to follow the ways of Jesus, there may just be something in that that could transform my life, your life. And maybe the order and the structure, the activism of the social gospel movement of last century, of the rise of liberal Protestantism, can remind us that when we come into a sanctuary, we don't have to check our heads at the door. We can bring all of who we are and who we've been into this space that scripture and tradition and reason and experience shape the ways that we're called to be God's people. See, the church has always been evolving, and we've lifted up some of what I believe are the most faithful expressions of how church has been in its time, but church, like Jesus in that moment, never stands still. And sometimes we've been evolving in really dysfunctional ways. We all have that tendency to think that we can work out our own salvation, to think that if we believe the right things, if we only act with enough justice, to think that our work can sustain us, to think that healing is a private matter, never to be laid out in the public, to think that healing comes from something new, it's this quick fix. How often do we find ourselves looking for that? Or thinking that good news stands still. If Jesus would just stop walking from village to village, from town to town, and if I could not just touch the fringe, but grab hold of it and hang tight on it. Those are the ways that we as church, as we evolve, have stumbled and fallen. We're evolving as a church, not in the sense that we're getting better and better and better and better. We're evolving more in the sense of the compost. We're taking those parts of our experience and we're putting them back together on layers. And we're mixing them around. We're creating a new kind of healing soil that God's seeds of grace and justice and hope can be planted anew in this day. And we're not really unique. This is what's been happening over the generations. We've been taking what's gone before us, mixing it together, and then letting God move, just like that soil. So I want to close with a poem that I experienced earlier this week, and it helped me to see and to feel what evolution of church might be and how it is in our lives. It's called The Gift by William Stafford. Time wants to show you a different country. It's the one your life conceals, the one waiting outside when curtains are drawn, the one grandmother hinted at in her crochet design. The one almost found over at the edge of the music after the sermon. It's the way life is, and you have it a few years given. You get killed now and then, violated in various ways, and sometimes it's turnabout. You get tired of that. Long suffering, you wait and pray, and maybe good things come. Maybe the hurt slackens and you hardly feel it anymore. You have a breath without pain. It is called happiness. It's a balance. The taking and passing along, the composting of where you've been and how people and weather treated you. It's a country where you already are, bringing where you have been. Time offers this gift in its millions of ways, turning the world, moving the air, calling every morning, here, take it. It's yours.
Pass me not, O gentle Savior.